You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for coming out and listening to The Real Short Box. My name is Donald.
And my name is Jarrett. Ruff.
And we are here to talk about, we're going to do another character profile, another little highlight here of comic bookdom, and we're going to be talking about a little bit of necessary roughness. We're going to be talking about the Peacemaker, the little-known character from Charlton and DC Comics.
Yeah, and if I can, just to quick say a quick monologue, and this is not something that was pre-prepared. I'm literally just saying this right now. This is Christopher Smith, career diplomat, intellectual, and a man who despises violence in any form! Exclamation point. Yet despite his peace-loving creed, this man can become a harsh, deadly adversary when danger threatens mankind! Exclamation point. He is master of every weapon known to man, and he has invented many. But these powerful and secret arms are for the exclusive use of the Peacemaker. Totally just came up with that.
Wow, that's really good. That's almost like you kind of read it off.
No. I did not read it off issue number one from 1967 of Peacemaker number one. I did not.
Oh, okay, cool. Cool. Yeah. Well, it sounded like it, so I guess you did a really good job.
Yeah.
Excellent. So we're going to dive in real quick to get started. Peacemaker first appeared as a background series in Charlton Comics espionage team titled The Fightin' Five, issue 40, if I recall, and that was from 1966.
Correct.
So it's been a bit, and the Peacemaker's got some heat behind him right now, particularly because of James Gunn and the announcement of Mr. John Cena playing the Peacemaker.
John Cena!
And he'll be in the Suicide Squad. So what I'm wondering is when we watch it, will we be able to see him in it?
I get it. I hope he doesn't give us a big F you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, that would be very traumatic. Perhaps we can make a wish.
Yeah. That's a deep cut, John
that
Cena
was
cut.
Deep cut, right?
He's a giver. He's a giver. He's a helper.
Yes, he is. Very much so. So diving back in then, the series was actually canceled of the Fightin' Five with issue 41. So he premiered in issue 40, and issue 41, it was almost like he was doomed from the start. They were like, the Peacemaker, issue 40, fuck it, let's just cancel it. And then like one issue later, it lasted, and then that was done. But from the ashes comes a phoenix rising, and that is the Peacemaker receiving his own title then. It, of course, then only lasted five issues. But it did come out in 1967, and then it had Fightin' Five as a backup series. So
they did a switcheroo.
Yeah. They thought maybe if it wasn't working so well the other way, that if they switched it around, it would do better. And it did not. It actually did much worse. So it got canceled pretty quickly.
And no joke, I just got, I sent you pictures. I just got from the original series, issue 1 and 4, because one, you know, the heat and it's great prospecting and all that. But more importantly, if you go and look at those covers, they are beautiful. They're from an artist back in the day named Pat Boyette, who I was kind of looking at his history. And he's somebody, just go look into him. He was a broadcaster. He was a movie directed old horror films. But this guy's sci-fi kind of adventure work is brilliant. I really loved it.
Yeah, it's quite a fascinating history on this dude, so definitely get a chance to check him out. You know, check out the comic books at least, the Peacemaker comics, because they are pretty to look at, I will say. So well done to him, for sure. So after the Peacemaker was canceled in 60, you know, whatever, it lasted five issues, so it could have been canceled in 68, probably. The DC Comics acquired the rights to the Peacemaker in the mid-1980s. They've actually acquired the rights to all of Charlton Comics in the 1980s. So that came along with it. And then they immediately ran with a 4-issue miniseries. They wanted to check that out and see how that worked. And apparently it didn't do too well for them either, because we didn't see a whole hell of a lot of him for a while.
Right.
He'll sporadically appear and pop up here and there. But that's it. So I guess probably what people want to know is, what is the driving force behind James Gunn's decision to go with the Peacemaker? Why choose this character? And Jarrett, I think you have some information that's going to just make people throw off the mouth when they hear the history, a little bit of a biography of this character. So go ahead and hit us with that.
Yeah. So first off, I mean, after my research and just delving into this character and seeing the footage of John Cena, first off, if you look at the Peacemaker's costume, it's a very gaudy costume. It's like a, like almost like a futuristic cop. It's kind of Judge Dreddy, kind of like sci-fi. He's got this like big silver dome helmet, and they went balls out with the costume for John Cena in the upcoming Suicide Squad film. Like they did not pull any punches. And as Cena was saying, James Gunn was trying to sell him on the character, and he said he's Captain America. He's a douchey Captain America, and he was like, "Done, I'm sold." And I was just like that. And once I get into the biography, you'll see that's kind of exactly true. He is a douchey Captain America. His whole thing is peace at any cost. So it's kind of an oxymoron, but he is the Peacemaker. Now the character, the one I'm going to focus on is the original. That's Christopher Smith. Now, his origin in Charleston comics is a little, it's more tame than what they ended up doing with him when he came into the 80s in DC. So I'm going to talk about that first. So the Peacemaker is Christopher Smith. He's a pacifist diplomat. So that thing that I read in the beginning, That actually is the title card of the first issue of Peacemaker 1. That's how they describe him. He's a pacifist diplomat, so committed to peace that he is willing to use force as a superhero to advance his cause. He uses an array of special non-lethal weapons, which will eventually change once he gets to DC. And he also founds a place called the Pax Institute, which is basically like his headquarters and his place to train people to be pacifists, but with violent tendencies. And most of the villains he goes up against in the Charleston books are dictators and warlords. And like Donald was saying, it only lasted about 5 issues, so it's short lived. So now that was him, Charleston, kind of nice, you know, bubblegum chewing, happy, you know, 60s. Then when DC brought him into the kind of dark and seedy 80s, when all the guys were kind of just getting off their coke binges and like, "Hey, I got a story for you. Let's make this guy darker." And so what they did with him is they created this really screwed up backstory, which is awesome, though. So
right.
His backstory is that he is the son of an Austrian industrious, Wolfgang Schmidt, and an American mother. He was born in New York, but raised in Austria. And this is where it starts getting dark. His father committed suicide in 1955 after secrets about his past in the war, that he was, you know, working in a Nazi concentration camp in Poland, and he was going to be charged with war crimes. So he killed himself when Christopher was 5 years old. And Christopher witnessed the event, which, of course, traumatized him and kind of strained his relationship and how he viewed his father. Mm-hmm. So his mom takes him back to the United States. They changed their last name, obviously, to Smith, because Schmidt, you know, kind of had that Nazi sound to it. So he becomes rebellious and an aggressive youth. He starts having visions or hallucinations of his father in an SS uniform speaking directly to him. And so as you can see, DC took a total turn. And I definitely think I'm wondering if they're going to go this route. I kind of think they are.
Yeah.
I think they're going to go this route because obviously it's James Gunn. They're going Ostrander Suicide Squad, which is like the darker one. So he goes, he turns 18, Christopher, and he enlists in the army. This is the Vietnam War. And he gets assigned to his first tour. And after an error from military intelligence and urged by the voice of his father, so he's hearing the voices of his father now. So he's probably schizophrenic. He inadvertently massacred a village full of innocent people. And he was charged and made the sole scapegoat, which would make sense since he did it. He's court-martialed. He's sentenced to 20 years to life in the federal penitentiary. While he's in jail, his mother dies. Dark, 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 dark. But now let's get to Project Peacemaker. So Christopher Smith, he's given parole. He's provided, but provided he works for the U.S. government as the Peacemaker, an elite secret police force that fights terrorism.
Right.
He's still hearing the voices of his father. And he just accepts this. He's just, this is part of him now. So he returns to Austria to head his father's business, which was an ammunition factory. But now he makes it sell household appliances because he's the Peacemaker. He settles in Switzerland. He founds once again this Pax Institute, which is a group of people dedicated to helping war victims. So he's got this outer facade of like, which he actually really is trying to be a good person. He's just also completely apeshit and insane. So he's the chairman of this company. His goal of peace, he wished to achieve in two ways. In his civilian identity, he wants to do it through charity. And then as the masked peacemaker, he wants to do it through his vigilante one-man army justice. But here's the thing where it starts getting crazy. So I told you he wears this helmet.
Yeah.
And he thinks that the voices of all the people that have been killed live in the helmet and they tell him what to do. And like what you were saying, like after his miniseries, he kind of disappeared for a bit. But then, like I was talking about John Ostrander, this is probably where James Gunn came into view of him. They were doing, I think Suicide Squad was doing good. The comic, the 80s version. So they were trying to tie in all these other books. So anytime there was a chance to tie in all the characters from Suicide Squad, they would. So they had Checkmate, which we've talked about on the podcast. They're a government agency, kind of like S.H.I.E.L.D., but for DC. Then there was the Peacemaker group. And so they were trying to like there was a really cool crossover in Suicide Squad, and it went through all these books, Firestorm and all these 80s books, and it's called The Judas Contract. And that's where I first saw Peacemaker, and it was all him hallucinating his father telling him to like kill people to like avenge his soul. And it was just, I was like, this guy's twisted.
Yeah.
And so as far as DC went with him, they used him for like a little bit in the 80s, and then they ended up, I think it was the end of the 80s, they had him die in a battle with Eclipso. Eclipso took over like this full island and was like possessing everybody.
They did like a 13 or I can't remember, is he 13 or 16 part? It wasn't a mini series. It was supposed to go as long as it would. And I think it was Keith Giffen that was writing it for a while, and then that guy, I can never remember his name. It's something Moore, Terry Francis Moore or Peter. Peter maybe Francis
Terry,
Moore.
Maybe Terry.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
He was a very prolific writer in the 80s and 90s for DC. And he picked up on the Eclipso series, and he was writing that. And it got canceled, of course, because it's a whole series based on a bad guy. And the artwork was dirty. It was just
very messy. Yeah.
Yeah. Growing up, when I looked at it as a kid, I was like, ooh, you know, but as like a teenager, then I was like, actually, this looks kind of cool because it shows Eclipso slaughtering a bunch of heroes, like a bunch of D-listers. And the Peacemaker was one of those guys that was in that series. I remember that very well.
Yep. He crashed his helicopter to destroy tanks controlled by the supervillain Eclipso and was reported dead. That's how I always remembered it. I'm like, okay, that's how he died. Then I guess they did, remember that Day of Judgment thing with where they I think they had like a lot of hero people were going to hell or something like that. I think it was like a big Spectre story. Eclipso was probably so. Smith's soul shows up in the realm of Purgatory in the Day of Judgment series. A team of heroes has shown up to recruit the soul of Hal Jordan. The Guardians of Purgatory do not like this, and Peacemaker, along with other dead vigilantes, rally and provide enough of a distraction so the group can return to Earth. Then it says the last appearance Peacemaker later appears in the Watchmen sequel Doomsday Clock, partaking in the battle on Mars against Dr. Manhattan. So they obviously didn't kill him, or they brought him back knowing he was going to be, I think he was dead. And then they're like, the purgatory thing was just for fun. And then someone was like, hey, James Gunn's going to use this guy in a Suicide Squad. And my prediction, I know everybody's saying, like, don't get attached. I don't see his character biting the bullet in this first one, at least. I think he's good. I think because it's John Cena, who's, you know, they've been trying to make a star out of for a long time, and everybody kind of loves the guy. He's kind of like, you know, with the Make-A-Wish, likable, you know, maybe not so much as a wrestler, but I think as a character, he's a pretty beloved guy, and he kind of makes fun of himself. So, and he's going to be playing an apeshit character. I don't see this guy dying. In my prediction, personal prediction, I don't see him dying. So I think this character's got a lot of legs. But that pretty much concludes this version of the Christopher Smith version up to date.
Yeah, they picked that back up actually. In Christopher Smith is kind of done for a bit, and they go with this guy named Mitchell Black,
right?
Who's a surgeon and was recruited by the Peacemaker Project. Then it's unaffiliated, interestingly enough, with the PAX Institute in the U.S. government's Project Peacemaker. Black, what he does is he reappears in a miniseries then titled The Law, which reunited the other heroes from the Charleston comics. It's like a team of, I think it was, what was it? It was Blue Beetle, Captain Atom, Peacemaker, the Judo Master, a few
Thunderbolt,
others.
Thunderbolt, I think, but I don't think, yeah. But I think everybody but the Question, I think, pretty much, right?
Yeah, I don't even know Thunderbolt was in it at that point, to be honest, because I think the rights to Thunderbolt was in somebody else's hands at that point.
Right.
Thunderbolt, I don't think DC kept the rights to him, or something happened, because Thunderbolt's, you can still find him around other places. So I don't know exactly what happened with him.
I didn't really
dig into it to find out. But they created this miniseries called Law, and it was kind of their way of trying to revitalize and bring back all the Charleston characters. They wanted to bring them back, and they wanted to actually do something with them. And this was in the, I think, the late 90s or early 2000s or something. It was relatively not too terribly long ago. So I think it was in the 90s, the late 90s, that they did this miniseries. And they thought that maybe this could bring some clout to the characters or some notice, and people would want to then, you know, read the stories and stuff. And if it did well, they were going to branch out and do more. It did not do well at all.
Yeah, it was another just 90s kind of,
right,
swing and a whiff.
Yep. And so basically, they ended up killing off the character, or at least you assume they kill off the character, via a supervillain named Prometheus in Infinite Crisis number 7. During a battle in Metropolis.
And I think it's literally like in the background, and you just see him getting killed.
Yeah, just some bitched out pretty easy, you know, and took it and died, and that was it. And they were like, yeah, whatever, you know, good riddance. But what's interesting is that he kind of comes back in a way as an individual that he appeared in a pre-Flashpoint Blue Beetle series.
Right.
He claimed to be both Smith and at one point Black.
Right.
So I think he eventually settled on Smith in stating that he was Smith. However, I don't think in this series he had his helmet at all.
No, I think he was like on a motorcycle with like tattoos and shit. Very like, I guess early 2000s look kind of. Yeah. Yeah. He was like on a motorcycle with like a hat.
Yeah,
I don't know if they're trying to do like a Punisher type thing, but it's pretty lame.
Yeah, and to be honest, if you see the picture of him on his bike with a hat and the tattoos and stuff, he kind of looks like the Goon.
Yes, yeah, he looks like the Goon with bad tattoos.
Yeah,
and like not as bulky. Yeah,
and the Goon was around back then, so I don't know. Maybe they got some type of inspiration from that character. I have no idea.
Right.
But they throw him in as kind of a mentor to Jaime Reyes in the Blue Beetle series. That's the one with Jaime in it. And he's kind of showing him the ropes and stuff. And
they run through so much backstory and like it gets so garbled. It's actually very confusing for somebody to read the history of his run in this Blue Beetle series.
Right.
So I'm going to recommend if you love Yaimi, go ahead and read that run. But if you don't, I think that it's probably an easily forgettable part for this character. You know, nobody really cares so much about this run. Everybody cares about his first original, particularly for investing purposes. A lot of people, if they're going to be looking into wanting to, prospect on characters, they're not going to want to look at the Yaimi Reyes version. That's not the one that's going to be in the Suicide Squad. So
boy, were people trying. They really were trying. They were like, oh, like James Gunn, Suicide Squad, this is the Peacemaker, first Peacemaker. And I'm like, no, because even if he says, if you go by what he's saying, then he's saying he's one of the other two guys. So then that's definitely not his first appearance. It was just kind of, I think, prospectors trying, you know, the real book is Fightin' 540, and it's a hard, hard book to find.
Oh, yeah. I mean, easy. You could, before they announced this, by the way, I was looking at like a 4 or a 5.0 CGC graded Fightin' 5 number 40, and it was going for over $500.
And still is. Yeah, exactly.
That's before the announcement. So it's never been a cheap book, to be honest. Nope. It's just a hard book because it was near the end of a run of a 60s series that wasn't doing well and didn't have a large print run. So issue 40 and issue 41 are hard as hell to find because of that reason. You can find issue 1 of the Fightin' 5 for a pretty reasonable comparatively to issue 40 or 41 just because they're more easily accessible.
Yeah. And I was telling Donald, I was trying to get this first appearance, same thing a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And I was at an antique shop and I saw in the little display case, they had a bunch of Fightin' 5 and I was like, oh shit, this is the place where they're going to have it. And they literally had every issue except 40. It's just like, God damn it. Like, come on.
Yeah, that makes sense. Probably somebody walked in, they saw that one and they were like, just like me, they were like, oh my God, finally. Yeah. And they grabbed it for a decent deal or whatever, and that was it. You know, they ran out the door with it, and we were happy as a clam. And then other people that would come along, I hate that. One of the worst things is going through a short box, and there's like an entire run of something, and you're getting so excited because it's getting to the issue that you want.
Mm-hmm.
And you get right to it, and you flip right to the next issue. You're like 39, and no, there's 41. Okay.
Yep. Okay.
Great.
Yeah.
Great, this is awful. You know, like, it's so exciting to find it, particularly in the wild, because it's so hard. Like, it's so hard oftentimes, because whatever book you're looking for, I can guarantee you other people are looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way it is.
Yeah, and literally my only chance, like, our hope of finding that book was, like, at, like, where I was looking for it was at like an antique shop where somebody just bought a bunch of comics, like old war comics, and didn't know what the hell they had. But yeah, I'd still like to get that book. I had a couple chances at it, but it was like a bidding thing. And it was one of those ones where it was like, it was good up until the last 2 seconds. And then somebody added in an extra like $100 kind of thing. And you're like, nope, don't want it that bad.
Not getting it. Yeah. Did you know, though, that they briefly showed a version of the Peacemaker in Kingdom Come with Mark Waid and Alex Ross, that series that they did?
Right, yeah.
He was a member of Magog's Justice Battalion.
Which would make sense, yeah.
He's wearing an outfit that he kind of looked like Boba Fett in it, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you guys get a chance or listen, you should Google that, the Kingdom Come series, and see if they have that online, a picture of the Peacemaker on there looking all Boba Fett cool. Because let's be honest, Boba Fett looks cool.
That's what we all decided a long time ago. We said Boba Fett looks cool, but he's only in the movie for like 2 seconds. I don't care. He's cool. Make more stuff with him.
Yeah. And he does make an appearance also in Justice League International number 65 as a weird Peacemaker version that he looks... God, how do I explain it? You know those, the cops from The Fifth Element?
Yeah.
He kind of looks like one of the cops from The Fifth Element, rubbed up on a judge from Judge Dredd too hard. And you got this hybrid thing then. That's exactly what he looks like. And so it's not a good look for him at all.
Well, but, and it, also a little backstory, a little history that we were going to talk about. Now, there was a time when Alan Moore was writing a series, right?
Yeah.
And what did he want to do? He wanted to use the Charlton characters, but DC said no.
Well, they said yes originally.
Oh, they did. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, and then they saw the script and they're like, oh fuck.
Yeah, they took it back. They were like, oh no, we want to keep all these guys alive, and we don't want them all to be like looking like this. So no, we can't do that. So he just had to basically just go in with, you know, work with Dave Gibbons. And go, okay, we need to recreate kind of a look that's similar to what these guys were. But, you know, it's going to go with these new names I've created for them. And then thus we get the Watchmen,
mm-hmm.
and we get the Comedian, who is the DC Alan Moore version of the Peacemaker.
Which makes sense, because they're like, well, like what? Issue 2 of the Watchmen, you have the Comedian raping... are attempting to rape the Silk Spectre. So they're probably like, there's no going back for Peacemaker if we have him do this. And so we're gonna say no backsies or backsies.
Right. And it's funny because they did do Grant Morrison did a mini series in DC Comics where he redid just quickly the Watchmen, kind of in a way, but like a Watchmen light. And he did it in one issue, and it had all the Charlton characters in there. Charlton characters. It had Blue Beetle Ted Kord. It had Captain Atom. It had the Peacemaker in there. It had all the characters that, you know, were supposed to be the Alan Moore version, but mm-hmm. was the DC version. And I thought that was pretty cool that they were able to do that, and he was able to get away with that.
You know, oh, that is cool.
You know, yeah, so it's... If you get a chance to check that out, that's a really cool little thing. It's one issue in a mini series, and it's the whole mini series itself is very confusing. So I don't recommend reading.
Wait, a Grant Morrison story is really confusing?
Yeah, surprisingly so.
Grant Morrison's like, okay, I'm going to sit down and write, but wait, let me drop some acid.
Yeah, he like. His current Green Lantern, I thought it was going to be amazing. I was so stoked because I was like, it's Grant Morrison with all these weird-ass ideas, and it's the Green Lantern Corps in space. Like, this is a match made in heaven. And then, like, I'm 7 issues in, and I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I don't like where this is going.
Right.
I don't want to be here. And
I remember the weird thing for me with Morrison, my introduction to him was very tame at first because it was when he rebooted the Justice League and made it the JLA and used like all the big guns,
uh-huh.
and the art was amazing, and the stories were just like these epic superhero stories. And then yes, gradually it started getting very Grant Morrison, but first it was like straight superhero stuff, and it was cool. It was interesting because it was like more modern, like he had like the Zor-El stuff with the angel things and all that. But then yeah, then he started going like fifth dimension, third dimension, like all this stuff. Yeah.
And then he created Aztec the Ultimate Man, remember that guy?
Yep.
Woo. That was a character, let me tell you.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that pretty much wraps up our whole thing here with the Peacemaker. If anybody has any questions or comments or anything, please feel free to leave one in the podcast comment section. You can also find us on Instagram, Facebook. Jarrett, what are we on podcast wise? I think we're on Spotify?
Spotify. Are we on Spreaker? I can't even...
We are on Spreaker still. Spreaker. We are on SoundCloud. We are on TuneIn now, so that's a really good one to check us out on. And we're on iHeartRadio as well. So we're on big guns. And YouTube.
And always on YouTube, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, YouTube, I'm sure we'll post some pictures of the things we're talking about, too. And, yeah, I can't stress enough, check out Pat Boyette's art, and especially his art on this the early... Peacemaker issues. It's just really cool. It's like a mix of like Steranko, and it's like a sci-fi Steranko. It's really cool.
Yeah, that's cool. And what else is cool is
you know, checking us out on these podcasts. We have all kinds of cool ones, fun ones. We did a nice two-parter on the history of Malibu Comics where we interview the creators. Mm-hmm. We've done some good review ones where we talk about other characters. We did one on She-Hulk. We did one on the Red Guardian recently that was really cool.
We did one more convoluted than Peacemaker. We did Hyperion and like the 50 versions of Hyperion. Yeah, that's a really good one to check out.
Wow. Sometimes these guys really get into it, but, you know, and just keep creating new and new and new. And it's like, nah, I'm out. But
yeah,
good for them for trying.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah. But thank you guys for tuning in. And hopefully, you know, when you're out and about, maybe we'll see you
at the comic shop.
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.